So thanks to the organising committee for giving me the opportunity to talk to you about 4GLS. So the contents of my talk just given here. So basically, what is 4GLS? What's it for? How's it going to work? What are the FELs going to look like? What are the R&D that we're doing to try to make this a real project? And what's the status now? So the banner at the top there tells you exactly what 4GLS is. It's a project that combines a superconducting energy recovery LINAC, synchrotron radiation, laser sources, FEL technology in a fully integrated multi-source, multi-user facility. And this is a picture of the concept of 4GLS, which I'll show you again later. So you can see it's a very, very busy slide. There's lots of things happening in 4GLS, but basically the point is that it's multi-source, multi-user, fully integrated system. I've just got one slide showing what the wavelength output is from 4GLS. This is the peak brightness. So 4GLS is optimized in the low energy range from the terahertz up to about 100 electron volts. And we've got three free electron lasers. So there's the XUV, the VUV, and the infrared. And then we've got the terahertz from the dipole. So in between the VUV and the infrared, this is a region that's very strong with conventional lasers, so we assume we're going to fill that gap with conventional lasers rather than trying to do it with a free electron laser, which doesn't seem very sensible. So we've got very high peak brightness all the way down from 100 EV right down into the terahertz region. We've also got conventional undulators, which are shown here in blue, and the comparison is with here is with Diamond, which is the UK third generation light source, which is designed basically to go from 100 EV and beyond. So what's the science need for 4GLS? Well, there's a fundamental requirement not just to understand static systems, but to understand dynamic systems, often very small units, nanometers, on fast timescales, femtoseconds. And it's not just about determining structure, it's about how these structures work. So on the left-hand side, you see this is how we view like the third-generation light source, a static system mainly. 4GLS, we want to look at dynamic systems on how they actually work. And 4GLS, as you've seen, is a combination of free electron lasers and spontaneous sources. It's greater than the sum of its parts. For what I mean by that is that we can use the FELs that really need a high quiet, high power, high peak brightness system. So these experiments on biological and chemical dynamics, materials under extreme conditions, nonlinear processes, etc. The experiments that need very, very high peak intensities. The spontaneous sources, this is looking at, obviously it's very short pulse still, dynamics of adsorbates and films, non-destructive biosystem dynamics, ultra-high spectral resolution. By combining these sources together, we can do some very exciting science on, for instance, pump probe, combining the FEL with the spontaneous light from the terahertz upwards, dynamics of nanoparticles, micro devices, spintronics, energy transfer in biomolecules, and so on. So the last slide explaining the overview of the science case. So it's an unprecedented probe of electron motion in atoms and molecules. We're trying to pioneer a new generation of experiments. We're looking at technology to underpin development of next generation devices, such as the spintronic system, and innovative dynamic imaging techniques. So let me take a bit of time now to explain how the machine actually works. So this is the concept picture again. So all these orange boxes, these are all superconducting LINACs, which are scattered around the machine. We've got three free electron lasers, an XUV one, which we heard about yesterday in a talk by Brian McNeil, an infrared one here, and a VUV one here. So the infrared one, it looks like a separate machine, but really it's placed right at the heart of the facility because there's lots of users would like to combine the infrared FEL with basically every wavelength that we can produce. So it's right at the heart of the machine. So let me try and explain what's actually happening with the electrons in this machine, because it's a little bit complicated to understand at first glance. So we've got something called the high average current loop, and this is an energy recovery system that Jeff has just explained to us. So this is the green line is what's the path the electrons are taking. We start here with a photo injector, 100 milliamp photo injector, that we just heard about. We'll go through the main LINAC. We come out at 600 MeV, and we go around an energy recovery system. And as we go around, the bunch length around here is a picosecond, and as we progress, it gets down to the VUV fail where it's about 100 femtoseconds. So we have progressive compression, which is what our users have requested, and of course it suits us as well because it minimizes the CSR effects. After that, we go back and we energy recover this 600 MeV beam and we dump at about 10 MeV. So this is a 60 megawatt electron beam power in this loop. You can see the normalized emittance is 2 millimeters milliradians. And to achieve this 100 milliamps, we're using Tesla-type cavities, Tesla-type RF frequency, 1.3 gigahertz, 77 picocoulombs at CW. The XUV FEL branch is the blue line on this slide. So now this is quite a different electron system. This is single pulses at a kilohertz going down this blue line. So we have one nanocoulomb, much higher bunch charge. This time we have variable energy, and we change the energy by using these two. There's two superconducting linacs in this branch here. So we use the same main linac to accelerate. We get round to here, and we go in at 750 MeV, and then we've got two extra linacs here, so we can take the energy up to 950 if we want to. And normalized emittance is the same as the high average current loop, but obviously it's a different photo injector, and it runs at a kilohertz, 1.5 kiloamp peak current. But these don't just work separately, these work at the same time in simultaneous operation. So electrons are passing down the green line and the blue line at effectively the same time, and I'll explain that a bit more in a minute. And also, simultaneously, the infrared FEL is working as well. So we're generating light from all these sources simultaneously, because the 4GS is all about producing short pulses and combining sources together. Obviously, we want to do these experiments which are time-resolved with very high precision. We have to synchronize everything very carefully. So our standard synchronization between any source is quoted as 100 femtoseconds, and we think with a bit of effort we can generate synchronization levels of the order of tens of femtoseconds for particular key experiments that require it. So this slide symbolizes that we have a master clock system that synchronizes everything together. But what I'd like to point out on this slide as well is you'll see these yellow boxes, and these are the conventional lasers which we envisage would be provided for the users to combine with the experiments as well. So it's not just FELs, it's also conventional lasers working together. So a little bit about the electron bunch trains that we're using here. So the one shown on this slide is what we call the standard bunch mode. So we have a high average current system, which is the green bunches down here. So we have these are at 77 picocoulombs per bunch, and they're spaced by 1.3 gigahertz RF frequency. And then every 1 millisecond, we have a high charge bunch produced by a different gun, which will be used by the XUV FEL, and that's the one nanocoulomb bunch. And then we have little gaps between that we have to fix by the accelerator physics. There's not just one bunch mode. A system like this is so flexible, there's almost an infinite number of possible bunch modes we could consider. So there's just some examples shown on the right. We can have continuous beam, we can have beam with gaps, we can have wide spacing, maybe for the VUV FEL or something in between. And this is entirely to be set by our users, really. Depending on the experiment they're doing, they can pretty much choose what they want to do. So this final slide on this bunch patterns just explains exactly what's happening in the machine at the same time. So these two photo injectors are working independently but producing electrons. This is the standard bunch train which I showed on the previous slide. Because the blue bunches are at a different energy, they get separated here in a dipole. They're at 750 MeV instead of 600. So we separate them there with a DC magnet, and then they get taken around on this loop, so you can see they're separated out here and go through the XUV FEL. The green bunches carry on and progress around the high average current loop, obviously producing light at these repetition rates, and the infrared FEL is shown here as having a continuous bunch train. But like I said, these are all very much flexible systems. So this is summarizing the main parameters for 4GLS from an electron point of view. I've highlighted the key features in red and some interesting features in blue, just to guide you. So the XUV FEL has variable energy, and so does the infrared FEL. the high ridge current loop is fixed. The bunch length in the high ridge current loop is changes progressively from about a picosecond down to 100 femtoseconds. And the repetition rate's 1 kHz for the XUV file. The VUV file, I'll explain more later on, but it's a cavity system which runs at a multiple of 4.33 megahertz, and the infrared FEL is 3 times that value. And I mentioned already the electron beam average power in the high ridge current loop at 100 milliamps is 60 megawatts, so quite an impressive figure. So the XUV FEL was explained in quite some detail yesterday by Brian McNeil in his talk in the afternoon, so I just want to briefly mention it again, that it's running at 8 to 100 electron volts with a multi-gigawatt output. And it's basically a true amplifier of the seed. It's a seeded system, seeded by an HHG, and it basically just mimics the input pulse. And it's about a 30-meter-long undulator system. This is a slide again that you saw yesterday, so I'll just go through it very quickly. We have these undulators here. We've got 13 undulators. 8 of them are planar at the start, and then we have 5 that follow, which are variable. Variable polarization undulators, these are Apple-type devices. So the output for the users, they can select any polarization they require. At 100 EV, we need to use all the undulators, and down at 10 EV, we only need to use the last 5, and something in between for the other energies. We're seeded by an HHG system, and the seed has to be focused down to the entrance to the undulator that's the first one in the system. The electrons going from right to left. And as Brian explained yesterday, we have a stepped vacuum chamber so we can get the seed in focus without any diffraction problems. So just a couple of slides on the pulse amplification. So the top graph shows what's actually at the entrance to the undulator. So the blue line is the electron bunch current, which is peaking at 1.5 kiloamps. But you can see it's a much broader pulse than the HHG seed pulse shown in red, which is a 30 kilowatt seed with a 30 kilowatt seed, 30 femtoseconds, full width half max. And at the exit of the FEL, at 100 EV, we're getting more than 2 gigawatts, and it's only broadened to about 50 femtoseconds. And you can see it's a nice clean pulse, and it's on top of this SASI structure. And Brian showed this in detail yesterday. We've done some initial simulations of timing jitter for what happens if the electrons arrive late. So this is shown here. The electrons arrive behind the peak of the electron bunch. Obviously, we get a drop in the peak power out of the system. And this graph at the bottom shows how the peak power varies with the timing difference. And basically, if we want to keep the peak power within 90%, then we need to keep the jitter less than plus or minus 45 femtoseconds. And there's more details on this in a poster this afternoon. So the VUV file, I'll spend a little bit more time on because you've not heard about that yet at this conference. So this is a 3 to 10 EV system producing about half a gigawatt of power, and it's based on a regenerative amplifier system. So it's got 2 mirrors, and the mirrors set a frequency of 4.33 megahertz. So that compares to the kilohertz from the XUV file. It's a system that's very tolerant to mirror degradation, which is good because in the 3 to 10 EV range, it's not easy to get mirrors, especially at the high end. We're relying on using coated aluminium mirrors, and we're only expecting need a reflectivity of about 40 to 60%. There's no seed used in this system, and it uses a 300-amp peak current. So this is what it looks like on the ground. The electrons are going from right to left. Remember, this is the last straight in the high ridge current loop, and this is what the focus mode looks like inside the cavity. We have hole outcoupling. So this shows how the radiation builds up in this VUV FEL, and it builds up very quickly because it's a high gain system. And we only feed back about 10% of the output power each time. So this is the first pass, second pass, third pass. Already by the third pass, it's getting quite a nice pulse. By the eighth pass, it's saturated. And this is what it looks like in terms of a spectrum. So the first pass, quite noisy, as you'd expect, but it quickly dies down into a very nice, repetitive, predictable, smooth pulse shape, which our users are keen to get. So we've carried out some 3D simulations of the VUV FEL, And this has involved a collaboration with 20 universities who've adapted Genesis code, included the 3D simulation of optical components, radiation propagation in the optical cavity. So the top left graph shows how the output power varies as a function of mirror reflectivity and hole radius. From the 1D simulations, we assumed a mirror radius of 2 and a reflectivity in the region of 40 to 60%. And you can see the 3D work has confirmed that this is a very, very flat area. So it's a very tolerant system for that point of view. But also that the 1D code was basically predicting about the right level. And again, hole radius on the left-hand side on this graph against the waste radius. And from the 1D simulations, we chose to work in this region around here. And again, you can see it's a nice, broad, flat system. So it seems that with the raffle type FEL is a very tolerant system. And one final graph on these 3D simulations. This is showing now how the power builds up from the entrance to the undulator to the exit as a function of where we focus the waste position to inside the cavity. And you can see that at the end of the undulator, it doesn't really matter whether the waste position is 11, 12 or 13 meters. The output power is pretty much the same. So again, it shows how tolerant we are to this. And there's a poster on this afternoon. Some remarks against about the VUV-FEL jitter. This is, again, electron bunch arrival timing jitter. So this graph here is showing the longitudinal slice of the beam. And this is a function of the number of passes. You can see it after about 10 passes, it reaches saturation. And this is the power. You can see with no jitter, it reaches 300 megawatts, and it pretty much stays level. If we put in a jitter of about 80 femtoseconds, then you can see it still builds up in about the same time, but there's obviously more jitter in the output power. And with 80 femtoseconds, we have a jitter of about plus minus 8% RMS. Just looking at the pulse shape from these simulations, we looked at various jitter values. And you can see that if it's 40 or 80 femtoseconds, the pulse shape is still fairly Gaussian. But as we get into 120 femtoseconds, the pulse shape is going quite non-Gaussian. And then this table summarizes how the saturation power varies as the jitter increases. And you can see that with a tolerance of about 80 femtoseconds, we've got this 8% saturation power variation. I've got one slide on the infrared FEL, because it's a fairly standard system, although it is, it's quite advanced of its type. This is designed to work 2.5 to 200 microns. It's an oscillator-based FEL high-Q system. We use superconducting RF to get the highest stability we can. And it's working over 25 to 60 MeV to get this large tuning range. And you can see we have two undulators in parallel here, so we can satisfy two user experiments at once. So the R&D studies that we're carrying out for 4GLS. So as was mentioned in the previous talk by Jeff, that we've constructed a prototype energy recovery LINAC at Daresbury. And this has given us experience that we never had before. Photo injectors, superconducting LINACs, energy recovery systems for electron lasers, single pass diagnostics, and so on. So we've built up a big skill base at Daresbury now by building this energy recovery prototype. And as was mentioned, commissioning as the photo injector has recently started. So in addition to this, the energy recovery prototype doesn't answer every question that is raised by 4GLS. And two in particular, one is we need a continuous wave superconducting RF LINAC capable of sustaining 100 milliamps. And there isn't one available that you can buy off the shelf. So we're in a collaboration where we're designing and constructing a prototype superconducting LINAC that's suitable to working at the 1.3 gigahertz Tesla frequency, suitable for 100 milliamp operation, particularly focusing on the higher order modes, as Jeff mentioned, and also we have to get a large RF power into this system. Another big problem which mentioned already, the high average current photo injector. We're now in the first stages of planning to build a prototype high average current photo injector as well. So a few remarks about the energy recovery LINAC prototype at Daresbury. So this is a graph that you've already seen from Jeff. So I'll go through it very quickly. So we have the photo injector based on the Jefferson DC gun, superconducting LINAC, 8 MeV out, and then we go down here to a second superconducting LINAC, come out at 35 MeV, then we go around the loop. We've got an infrared FEL here, which we'll use to disrupt the electron beam to check that the beam dynamics are good in the second arc, and then we energy recover in the supernode neck again. And here are the main parameters of the system. Some photos of the ERLP. So magnets on girders, the supernode neck we've bought from Axel. This is the laser, and this is the photo injector. As Jeff already mentioned, first electrons came from the photo injector on the 16th of August. As is traditional, it was in the after midnight, and this was at 250 kilovolts with a quantum efficiency from the cathode of about 0.05%. By the 22nd of August, we got the nominal gun voltage that we'd aimed for of 350 kilovolts, and we'd re-cesiated the cathode, and the quantum efficiency is now 0.5%. And obviously, this is something that's changing daily, this progress with this commissioning. So the status of the project, we've published the CDR this April. It's available for download from the website shown there. We've started the technical design phase now, and we're aiming to publish the TDR in 2007. Prototyping of the high average current LINAC has started. Prototyping of a high average current gun is in the planning stage. The commissioning of ERLP is starting to get interesting, and we expect to get energy recovery from ERLP spring 2007, and we'd hope to get first lasing by the time of the next conference if we can. So I've got two last slides. First of all, thanking everyone from the design team. Obviously, this isn't just my work. This is lots of dozens and dozens of people's work. The design team for 4GLS and also the team who've constructed ERLP at the same time. And I'd like to give a special thanks to all our international collaborators. For those of you with very sharp eyes, you might have noticed on the photo injector celebration pictures some colleagues from Jefferson Lab there who have played a massive role in our project. So a very special thanks to them, but also to many other labs who we wouldn't have got this far without your help. So thanks very much to you all. And finally, I just want to make an announcement for those of you that don't know about it. We've got a one-day workshop on the 8th of September, the next steps of 4GLS. It's like a user consultation meeting explaining the machine to our users with some keynote speakers and explaining state-of-the-art experiments using pump probe and short pulse and so on. So you're all invited to that meeting if you can make it to find out more about 4GLS and to find out maybe what you can do with it when it's built. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. Plenty of time for questions or comments if people are waking up now. One on the left, Shaka.
If I understood correctly, the VUV branch of the machine is an energy recovery LINAC, and the XUV branch is not.
That's right.
So why is that?
Oh, that's very simple. The XUV branch, because it only works at 1 kilohertz with one pulse, it only has a kilowatt of beam power, and a kilowatt of beam power is just not worth recovering. On the other hand, the other branch is 60 megawatts of beam power, and we certainly couldn't do that without energy recovery.
Ah, thank you.
Any other questions? On at the top.
On the XFER, I think I saw a 45 femtosecond timing spec to meet the power jitter. But I didn't see anything saying how you would meet that. I think we'll hear in other talks that people can synchronize various devices very well to each other to tens of femtoseconds, but synchronizing the beam is a different story, you know, with energy jitter and dispersion and so forth. Can you comment on how you approach that?
Well, it's a very key point, and it's not something we've got an answer to, quite honestly. It's something that we're all working very actively on. I don't think anyone has a tight grip on exactly how good you can achieve. I think the point is that we're quite pleased how relaxed these numbers are compared to what we might have expected. And we know that we can synchronize experiments to 10 femtoseconds if we really need to, but it's the electron beam arrival time that's tricky, and I think that's the point you're making. So let me just say that it's a very active area of work for us, and we're certainly not relaxed about that number.
One down in the middle.
In one of your slides, you showed the output of your VUV laser as a function of zeta.
Yes.
And some of the output actually is higher than when you have zeta. You don't have zeta. What's the reason behind that?
Slide's gone.
Jim, it's on.
Yeah, I think you're showing that you're pointing out that with the jitter, we actually go up to this much higher level. Yeah, that's a bit surprising, I guess. I guess you should talk to this guy here at the poster and get a full explanation. I don't know what's going on there. Maybe we're going into some sort of super agent regime, I don't know. But come along this afternoon, I guarantee you'll get a good answer. A better answer than I can give you.
No more questions? Last chance? Okay, let's thank the speaker again, please.